This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Yeah, we're good.
Don't juice me.
Parshas Lech Lecha, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Way to go, Paul. Vayibim Amraphel, Melech Shinar, Aryoch, Melech Alasar, Kedorla, Omer, Melech Elam, Sidon, Melech Goyim. We've got four kings. We have Amraphel, we have Aryoch, we have Kedorla, Omer, we have Sidon. And then it says, Asu Melchama, Perek Yud Dal, Pasuk Beis. Asu Melchama is Bera, Melech Sam, Birsha, Melech Amor, Shinov, Melech Admo, Vishem Aver, Melech Tzvoyim, Umelech Bela, He, Tzoar. We have five kings, but we only know four of their names. We have Bela, we have Birsha, we have Shen. Shinov, we have Shem Aver, and the king of Bela, which is Tsoar. We don't know exactly what that king's name was. But regardless, we have the five kings all together. So the Torah felt a need to name every single one, which is completely unnecessary. There is nothing that we're getting out of knowing who these five kings are. There's no one here who knows any of these people. In fact, even those that say that Amraphel is Nimrod, as we'll see later on, you don't know who Amraphel is. There's no need to mention Amraphel. It's literally like bringing up somebody random. So why in the world is the Torah wasting our time with this? Like a nice little history. Oh, well, they were there for 13 years, and then there was a war in the 14th year. But who cares? Why is this being brought up over here? That's the gain. What gain do we get from knowing who these people are? That's number one. Number two, the question that's bothered me for a long time is, why is Avram getting involved in this fight? I understand Lot was captured, and Lot was taken, and they wanted to make it up. And I get that. I understand Avram even wanted to get his nephew Lot back, which makes a lot of sense. You're fighting against four massive kings. You're going up against that. There is no heter in the world to put your life in danger for someone to go into war against them. I don't care if it was Eliezer of Avram or 318 Avadim with them. You're going into war to save your nephew. Where is the heter to do this? Where is that heter? Is this a test of some sort? How could there be a test to put your life on the line for a person who left you, for your nephew who already left you and went to Sodom to live? Why in the world is this? And what's the point of this? Meaning, what kind of lesson are we learning from this parsha? Why is this being told to us? That's really the question that's bothered me for a long time. So first thing to point out over here is the Valaturim. Balaturim says, anytime it says Vayihi Bimei, it's really Gemara Megillah, right? And Daf Yudam Abayz, Yud Alpha Med Aleph. Wherever it says the word Vayihi Bimei, those two words, there are tsaros in the world. And says the Balaturim, the reason why it says it over here, Vayihi Bimei Amraphel, and really again, it's the Gemara that says that this is the very first world war, or at least the first known battle, where people went up against each other and fought against them. Remember, not too long ago, everybody was at peace with one another at Migdal Bavel. Not too long before that was the end of the Mabul, where everybody was brothers with each other, with Shem, Cham, and Yafes. Things seemed to be doing pretty well. So we're talking about peace, people who are at peace with each other for years and years and years. And that led to this, the very first world war. And obviously, it's quite appropriate to be able to use the words, Vayihi Bimei, the tsaros that came into the world because of this. It's a strange thing and a terrible thing to see and hear about. Whenever there's war, no one's happy. This Vayihi Bimei especially is referring to this over here. Vayelis HaShachar, Reb Shteinman, says it's possible that nobody called these kings by these names. That these names are said for us alone, for us to know about these kings, but that's not their actual names. If you were to go back in history and look for an Amraphel and a Kedorla Omer and a Sidal, etc., you won't find them. They don't exist. But the names are telling us what to do with them, how to understand what kind of people they were, in order for us to understand what happened and to learn something from it. Says Rashi, based on Erevin, Daf Nun Gimel Mem Aleph, Amraphel is really Nimrod. The reason why he's called Amraphel is because Omar Pol, he said to Avram that he should be thrown into the Kivshana Ish. So Amar, he said, pull, that he should fall into the Kivshana Ish itself. That's what happened. When did that happen? Okay, it's Akasha, but at some point, Avram was thrown into the Kivshana Ish by Nimrod, and Amraphel represents that. Rochayim Kanievsky asks, the wrong name. It's not Amraphel. Amraphel means he said for him to fall, but he didn't say for him to fall. He threw him into the Kivshan Eish. He picked up Avram Avinu and threw him into the Kivshan Eish in order to kill him. So it should be Amar Hishlihu, something like that. Amar Shalach should be the name of the guy, not Amraphel. Something's wrong with that name. Why is he called Amraphel itself? Says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and only Rav Chaim Kanievsky would know a medrash like this. The medrash is brought down. It's brought in Otzer HaMidrash by Eisenstein in the Kivshana Eish. Says a midrash Kivshana Eish. He says that when the people tried to throw Avram Avinu into the Kivshana Eish, they all burned up. They would pick up Avram Avinu and they were about to throw him in, and the fire would come out and consume the guards who were trying to throw Avram in, but Avram survived. Every guard who went to throw Avram in was burned by the fire and destroyed and killed. So in the end, no one could throw Avram Avinu in. So Nimrod told Avram, jump or I'll kill your family. And therefore it's Amar, pull. You have to fall into the pit. And Avram Avinu fell into the pit. He wasn't thrown in. He fell into the pit because Nimrod told him to, in order whatever it is. And that was the Kiddush Shem. That's Amra fell, Amar pull from Rechayim Knievsky. The Gemara goes on and says, he was named Nimrod because he caused the world to rebel against Hashem. Whether that's at the Migdal Bavel or during this war itself, he caused the people to be murad against the Kaddish Baruch Hu himself. Rav and Shmuel argue what the real name was, what the fake name was. Was he really named Nimrod and he was called Amraphel? Was he really named Amraphel and he was called Nimrod? Which one is it exactly that's considered the nickname? Which one is there? So it says, it seems they both agree that they are the same person. How do we know that they're the same person? That Amraphel and Nimrod are the same person? Where's the hint to it in the Pasuk? And that the Marsha says over there in that Gemara in Erevin, that it makes sense. Nimrod is known as a Gibor Tzayid. When he's described in last week's Parsha, he's called a trapper, the greatest of the Tzayidim, the greatest of the trappers. He's a person who was in charge of others and always doing that type of thing. In other words, he was a hunter who was around there. Chazal tell us that that hunter was not just a hunter of animals, but a hunter of people. He was a hunter of human beings. He was a warmonger. And the very first war we see, and actually the only war we see at this time, is the four kings versus the five kings. So Chazal immediately get on that and they say, if Nimrod is known as a person who starts wars, and we see that Amraphel is the first person mentioned by the first war, then it makes sense that Amraphel, who started the first war, is Nimrod, who is the man of war. It just makes sense to be able to put the two together. Says the Marsha, that's where we get it together. Shinar, therefore, if it's referring to Nimrod, is a place in Bavel. Possibly Sumer. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, so forgive me if I'm wrong. S-U-M-E-R. Is anybody here from Iraq or anybody know anybody from Iraq? You are, Joe, aren't you?
Syria?
Oh, wait, then that's an insult. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean that. But either way, he lived in possibly Sumer. That area is known as the very first, earliest known civilization in the Mesopotamian area. It was around that area, including Ur, and a few other cities. Ur still exists today. It's still around in this area, in the Mesopotamian area, in this area of Ur itself, in the area of Sumer, I should say, itself. Some manuscripts of the Targum say that it is Bogtos. And if it's Bogtos, then it's referring to Baghdad. That the area that he was the king of was the area of Baghdad in Iraq, but it's all in the same area. You're basically dealing with the Tigris and Euphrates River. The entire area was where he would have taken over, somewhere around there. Tur and Paneach Raza say he was the oldest of the four kings, the oldest of all those four kings mentioned, and that's why he's mentioned first, even though the other kings were actually stronger, which is why Kedor LaOmer in Pasuk Tes is mentioned first, because he was the first warrior to go out to war, but Nimrod is one that started it because he was the oldest there. Then Itziv says Amraphel was the leader, but Kedar LaOmer was the stronger and a bigger general as well. The Chizkuni says he's mentioned first because he's the one that started this huge war. Okay, that's what I mentioned over there. Rav Aryeh Kaplan in the Living Torah. The Living Torah is amazing when it comes to this. It has a source. I don't know where this source is. I've never seen it. That Nimrod was Hammurabi. He was one of the people that wrote or whatever was involved in the Book of Hammurabi that has these random laws and goes through, etc. He was the most famous of the four kings for that reason, and therefore he's listed first at this point, even though he was not as powerful as the others. And that's the idea behind it. That's the concept that the Living Torah brings down. I don't know if there's any proof to that. I didn't want to go searching through the internet to try to find that out. But if anybody has any proof for that, we know that Nimrod is the Hammurabi type of idea, I'd like to see that inside. Targum Yonasan says Aryoch, the second king, was a known robber, and he was the king of the robbers. He was the king of all the evil people that existed in this world, the king of all the people out there. El Luster, his city, is a city that's around 100 miles south of Bubble, that goes south of Bubble. It was a major power back in the day. When you're dealing with that, he said it took over that area right there. So we're dealing with Bavel, that was Amraphel, and then we have Aryoch, which was right down below. Das Akenim says the name Aryoch hints to a Maimer Chazal that when Rav and Shmuel argue, you guys do know this, who wins when Rav and Shmuel argue with each other? Rav when you're dealing with Mammon. And we hold like Shmuel when it comes to Isurin, right? Rav and Mammon, Shmuel when it comes to Isurin. Shmuel was called Aryoch in the Gemara because the name Rach is used to describe a king, and Shmuel was considered a king of his time. He was a doctor, as well as a massive roshiva in the yeshiva of Narada. When Rav came, he ended up moving to Sura, right around the entire area. He was right over there. But the Das HaKeinim says, here's the psak, and here's how it goes through. Aryoch refers to Shmuel. It's referring to that king. Aryoch is melech. He's the king, meaning he wins El Aser in a case of Iser. Aryoch Melech El Aser tells us that Shmuel wins when it comes to Iser. So if you ever have that question again, where do we pass in like Rav, where do we pass in like Shmuel? Remember this line, Aryoch Melech El Aser, and you'll remember Shmuel wins in a case of Iser. Kedar LaOmer, according to Targum Yonasan, was a man who sat in the middle of a circle. He had a circle of advisors that was always around him, and he used to talk to them all at once, possibly by swiveling his chair, going from one to one so he could talk to everybody at once. Perhaps that means that he listened to the advice of others, which means that he was a good king. Kedar LaOmer would have been a good king, similar to a type of democracy. But it might have meant that he always kept making up his mind and then changing it. Changing and changing and changing, said the opposite of what he said before. He would go one way, then go another way, then he'd go another way, and he kept doing it. The Aruch says he was surrounded by armies, so he would never be assassinated. All of this is learning out from the name. Kadur is a ball. Kadar LaOmer means he always was surrounded over there. Rav Kaplan says the name comes from the word Kudur, which is near the city of the Kedarim. Everybody knows Kedar, like the Khazars, right, that ended up becoming the Khuzari, was written based on them. That area right over there, which means he was a servant of Lagamar, which was a god at that time that existed over there. Midror Ophel says he was a son of shame or a grandson of shame. And he lived, he was from all the way back. He would have been a very, very old person at the time, at least 300 to 400 years. That's who Kedar LaOmer was over here. This name leads to a massive machlokas. How do you write it in the Torah? In the Gemara in Chulin Samachay, it's not clear whether you're supposed to write it as one word or two words. And the truth is, the way the Gemara ends in the Maskana of the Gemara in Sanhedrin over there, it seems that you should write it as two words, Kedar and LaOmer. That's how the Gemara seems to end off. But the Minchas Shai brings down a Ramah that paskins that we make it one word because of the Gemara in Chulin Daf Samachay. But the Gemara seems to say at the very end, and it's pretty clear, that it's two words. So in every Torah that you'll see, Kedar LaOmer is one word. It's just one word. It's never split up to itself. It seems there's something missing here. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says it could be Kedar LaOmer is always one word. But there's a shaila if it says S Kedar LaOmer. If the word S appears in front of it, then how do you write the word? Perhaps that's when. There are two places where Kedar LaOmer is written with an S in front of it, in Pusik Dalid and in Pusik Tes. Since we have a suffix, which one the Gemara is talking about when it says it should be split up into two? Are we talking about Pusik Dalid or Pusik Tes? Therefore, we go with the robe that Kedar LaOmer is singular, and that's why throughout the entire Torah, you're always going to see Kedar LaOmer always as one. There's a Torah to me on this as well, but it happens to be Kedar LaOmer is a little bit of a Shiloh. The last king, Sidal, is an interesting one. The last king, he was the king over the Goyim. Rashi says this was a place that was so named because people from all over the world, it was like a melting pot. People came from all over to live inside this area. Goyim, as in, they were the nations. It was almost like America, that it became a melting pot for people from all over the world to come together and become a nation. This was what Goyim was, and Sidal was the king that was put in charge from everybody there. Targum Yonasan says, Sidal was as tricky as a fox. I do not have any idea where he gets it from the word, because tricky as a fox, so how do you call, what do you call a fox? In Hebrew? Not in Yiddish, don't worry. A shual, right? Shual, Sidal doesn't sound or look anything like Shual. Saf Dalid Ayin Lamed is not Shin Vav Ayin Lamed. I mean, they got the same last name of Al. But other than that, it doesn't make any sense. I don't know where they get that from. But regardless, Targum Yonasan says, tricky as a fox, he found ways to trick other people. People listened to him because he seemed so sly and cunning, everyone assumed he knew what he was talking about. Rav Kaplan says he's known as Tud Gula. Again, I could be mispronouncing that completely. King of the Chiti and the Kurdish nations. Ibn Ezra says, it could be that Goyim was right by Shushan Abira, and they had different minhagim than Shinar, so it was three different areas altogether. Rav Wolfson brings a Medrash Rabbah to Rav Yochanan and says his name was Visidal, with a vav. Not Sidal, but Visidal was his actual name. Now that's weird. Why would it be the way? Well, if you look at the Pusik on the first page of your papers, you'll see the first names do not have a vav. Ibn Ezra, Rafael, Aryoch, Kedar LaOmer, Visidal. That's not the way things go. It's not like that. In English, yes, it says this guy, and that guy. But in Hebrew, you don't do that. You do vav by every single name. But it doesn't say vav by every single name. It only says it by the last one. It sounds like that vav is part of the actual name. It really is called v'sidal itself. And according to the Reb Wolfson, that's exactly what it is. But he explains why. And it makes a lot of sense. Melech Goyim is referring to Edom. As we just said, it's referring to America, which is the Edom of nowadays. It's referring to Edom. The way that Edom fights us is not like anybody else. Yes, they're enemies of ours, just like any other nation, and at times have tried to kill us. But Edom's main job is to be Achi Esav, to act like our brothers, to pretend like they're friends of ours, and then destroy us in the end. This Sidal means he was Vav Sidal. His job was to be a Vav. They tried adding themselves on to the good people of the nation to corrupt them. They wanted people to join their nation. They said, come, we're a nation of everybody. Everybody can join. Freedom of religion. You can do whatever you want. And they would become your friends, and they would slowly but surely knock you down and destroy you. They would demoralize you. They would do things that were immoral in front of your face and say, why? What's the problem? We're all friends together. You have to accept us like we're accepting you. If we're going to allow your freedom of religion, you should allow us to do what we want to do. And slowly but surely, they corrupted the people around them and destroyed them. That's how evil the Sidal was. That's the Vav. And that's exactly the way that Edom acts even today. The concept of be like us and then everything will be fine. You don't have to worry about anything else. That's the concept that Revolson learns out from over here. Rashi says, each one of the five kings that we know of the five kings of Sodom, their name means something unbelievably evil. Just listen to the name. Bera and Birsha just means they're evil. Bera and Birsha. Adaris Elio, the Ben Ish Chai, says, it explains why Sodom and Amorah were so much worse than every other nation. Their kings were so evil. Their names were known as Ra and Russia. And not only that, but Bez Ra, Bez Russia, says Adaris Elio, says the Ben Ish Chai. He says they did two evils. Number one, they themselves were unreal in their evil, and they did everything they could to be evil. But they caused others to do it as well. They were so influential, because they were kings, that they made other people do whatever they wanted them to do. They convinced them, do this, do that. And they caused two evils in the world. One, what they were doing, and the other, that they were making other people do. That was the reason why Edom, Sodom, and Amorah became so corrupt so quickly and had to be destroyed. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked at them and said, I can't do this anymore. I can't have a land that's filled with this evil when you have a king that's encouraging people to be that evil that quickly. We have an example of this. I mean, listen, if you wonder, how in the world could people become that evil that quickly? Just look at Russia in the last 100 years. Look at what Russia did in a total of 50 years of communism. How they were able to literally turn around a nation of people who were Russian Orthodox. They were people that were religious people, aside from the Jews, and destroy religion in a period of what? Literally half a century. Destroy everything that had to do religion. You can find that by certain nations if you're talented enough. And Bera and Birsha did exactly that in Sodom and Amorah, literally turning it from a beautiful land filled with different types of good people into a spiritual wasteland that's now known as the Dead Sea. That's the idea of what happened. The Igret Akala points out the first two kings of Sodom and Amorah have the word S written by them. None of the others do. It says S Bera, S Birsha, but the others, Shinav Shamever and the king of Bela, etc., it doesn't say those names by them. It doesn't say an S by them because everything else was toppled to Sodom and Amorah. Sodom and Amorah were the two big cities. That's why you always hear Sodom and Amorah or Sodom and Gomorrah. Ayin in Hebrew is a guttural ayin, so it's really Gomorrah. That's why Aza is Gaza, and we pronounce it as Gaza. It's not really Gaza the way we'd say a G, like a gimel. It's Gaza as in Gaza. That's what it's supposed to be, and that's why it's called that way when it's really not that way. So whatever in Eretz Yisrael, whenever you see a G in front of one of those names, it's because the ayin does not pronounce the way that we pronounce it as Ashkenazim, because we're messed up. It's pronounced in a different type of fashion, a guttural fashion. So that's what it is. It's Sodom and Gomorrah, right? That's where it comes from. The idea is that they all followed what Sodom and Gomorrah did. Rashi says Shinov hated his father. We say the father refers to Hashem. He hated God, and everything that reminded him of God, he hated everything. Targum Yonatan seems to say he hated his own father and he couldn't stand his family. What that has to do with anything, we have absolutely no idea. But that could be the idea behind it. Bereishis Rabbah says he took money away from others. He was shoev mammon. He drew in the money of others and grabbed it for himself. And that's what Shinav was. Rashi says Shem Aver, strange Rashi, made wings for himself. And he would fly around in the sky as high as he could as a form of rebellion against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. As we say that Migdal Bavel was a tower that they used to go fight against God, Shem Aver actually made human wings, like the Wright brothers had nothing on this guy, right? We still haven't figured out a way to really do this. And was able to fly up in the air and go, maybe he made a glider, and he jumped off a mountain, and he glided. Is that the right word? Glowed. Let's say glowed. Glowed sounds a lot better. Glowed all the way down through the mountain in order to fight God. And we go through that, I guess, with air current, with wind currents, etc. He's able to lift himself up, right? If he got the right currents, he's able to go up in order to fight HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What a strange medrash. What a weird name. But Shem Aver, that he went up against Hashem with his wings, with his limbs, like that. Targum Yonason says he also created an Aver for sinister purposes of Znos. What were you going to say, Mick?
Yeah. What did he do when he went up there?
So, next part, Bereishis Rabbah says he flew far away in order to get money and bring back with him a ton of stuff. Maybe he just cursed God and he felt that it would be better to curse God from all the way up in the heavens. But it doesn't say anything more. I looked as many Midrashim up as I could. I couldn't find anything else on Shem Aver other than these two Midrashim, and those three Midrashim, the Bereishis Rabbah itself. But I don't have anything else. Panech Raza says that his city was Tzvoyim. It's spelled Sadi Beis Yud Yud Mem. But we pronounce it Tzvoyim as if it's Vav Yud Mem. The reason why it's spelled Sadi Beis Yud as in Tzvi, as in a gazelle, is because the people there were swift as a gazelle to do, unfortunately, terrible things against God. And that's why it was called Tzvoyim. It was Tzviyim, but the real name of the city was Tzvoyim itself. The Ramban says the last king, Bela of Tzoar, we don't have a name for him. He was a king of a very small city, so he wasn't Choshev. So we're not going to name him in the Torah. He wasn't named because he wasn't Choshev at all. Targum Yonatan says that his city was known for sinkholes. That's why it's called Bela, which grabbed the inhabitants and sunk them in. Now, there are sinkholes all over the Dead Sea. It's actually an extremely dangerous place where they have that little thing. There's like little signs where it shows you like a little guy like jumping in like that. There's like a little, you know, the guy that's like looking like that going in. Don't go there because you'll die. It's not a smart place to go, but there are sinkholes all over. But that's most likely because of the Dead Sea area. The fact that there were sinkholes before it became the Dead Sea, before the destruction of Sodom and Amorah, is a little bit strange, but nonetheless, it swallowed up its inhabitants. It was called Bela for that reason. Tzoar just means small city. I guess that's how it remained small. Like every time it got too big, it just swallowed up people and then you were good, you know? It worked out that way. Ayelas HaShachar says there's a medrash that when the cities of Sodom were destroyed, this one survived because of Lot's tefilos. Lot davened and was able to save Bela and Tzoar. So the city, right, was there. But the inhabitants were swallowed up during the destruction of Sodom and Amorah because there were still evil inhabitants. The city remained, but the people were swallowed up in the ground, sort of like Dustin and Aviram were later on. And because they were swallowed up by the ground, nobody was left. That's why the daughters of Lot, even though they saw the city survived, nonetheless, the daughters of Lot thought everybody was dead because if the city wasn't destroyed, the people were sunk into the ground. So they thought that they were literally the last people on earth. That's the idea behind it. Some say that Bela refers to things that are going to happen in the future. The Chidah says that the name of the king was actually Bela. That the name Melech Bela, Hitzor, is the king Bela of the city of Tzor is the way to read it. Maybe it's also the name of the city itself. That's why it was written that way. The Maral Diskin and Yaakov Kamenetsky both say that he might not have been as evil as the other kings. So the other are known as Bera, Birsha, Shemever, etc. because of the evil things they did. This king wasn't as evil, so we don't need to name him. That's that. Emesli Yaakov says maybe the whole thing because he said, okay, whatever. There's another Emesli Yaakov here. Rav Wolfson says that we never see this city was destroyed. And we see later on, this city seems to have survived. It doesn't make any sense to say it would be named Bela if it wasn't destroyed. Now, we said the people were pulled in, but he says we don't see that anywhere. We don't see that anywhere. So he says it's all a remez. There's a line that's used by Reb Chaim Vital in which we say that the Anshei Dor HaMabul, the people were destroyed by the Mabul, were misgalgil into Dor HaMigdal, into the Dor, the generation of the dispersion of the Migdal Bavel. And some say that's the same generation as Anshei Sodom. So compare Anshei Dora Mabel, they became the Anshei Sodom. The people of the Mabel obviously were destroyed by the Mabel, swept away by the water. The people of Sodom were destroyed by fire. There's water and then there's fire. There's a third time that these people come back. A third time where these Gilgulim come into play. Says Reb Chaim Vital, it was Adas Korach. They were swallowed up by the water, swallowed up by fire. The third time, Adas Korach was swallowed up by the ground. It's not a coincidence also that some of them were burned in a fire of the Ketores that they made of their own accord. Obviously, that's connected as well. The word Bela, therefore, refers to what would be with them in the future. Even if those people weren't killed then, they weren't swallowed up then, they will be swallowed up. It's a remez to how this generation, the Dor, this Gilgulim, these Gilgulim, how they were going to be destroyed in the future, that if they didn't improve, that was going to be. Now, obviously, guys, if there are four elements, right? There's Esh, there's Mayim, there's Ufer. They've been destroyed by water already. That was in the Mabel. They've been destroyed by fire already, right? That was in Dor Sodom. They've been destroyed by the ground already, the Ufer, right? That's by the times of Sodom. The last element is Ruach. And maybe, perhaps, that means that this Dor that we're talking about that's so evil, is going to be... I'm sorry?
You don't think the ground is Korach?
That is. That's Korach. That's Korach. Oh, I'm sorry. I said Sodom. Yeah, I'm sorry. Korach, right? The fourth time they come back, could be that's Dor Ikvasid Mashiach. In the times of Mashiach, that generation will be around, and their Gilgul, so to speak, their Tikkun, is to get with the Ruach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be improved to the point where they're going to be moved up instead of being destroyed. They will be destroyed, meaning their regular bodies. There's going to be a new world where the Ruach comes in and brings them up to a higher level and allows them to become like Eliyahu HaNavi, a different type of destruction, what really would be called almost like a tikkun. That would be the idea of how it goes over here. Who knows if that's the idea over here. There's a lot more in Reb Wolfson over there, but this is the idea of what Reb Wolfson goes into. Yeah.
Two questions. One, is that talking about our generation?
It could be. I hope.
The world is going to come again.
Hopefully, yeah. Yeah, do you remember it? Probably not. Yeah, yeah.
The other question was, that Korach, there was only a few people.
It wasn't a few people. We were talking about Dustin Aviram, but remember that when we're dealing with Jewish neshamos, there could be connections that a Jewish neshama could be comprised of many, many different people. It could also be that those people, right, also were divided up into other people that lived at the time, and they were also swallowed up in some way, shape, or form. I don't know. When you're dealing with this type of stuff, and you're dealing with Reb Chaim Vital, I'm not going to go any further than what I'm looking at, because you kind of can't take it a little bit further. So I don't know. But what happened over here? So how did this happen exactly? How did the war happen? Sforno says, Amraphel was a well-known king at the time, and during his days, Arioch, Kedola, Omer, and Sidal all got up and fought against the five kings. That's all the Sforno says. The Malbim says Amraphel had already taken over Ashur years earlier. The king of Ashur had already left earlier, and Amraphel took over the area. It was all his. He then met three other kings that were like him and could help him rule over the entire known world. So they made a pact together. They made a big bris together. They all got together, and they've started the world conquest. They started with Sodom and Amora, and they would have continued throughout. They would have gone to Mitzrayim, they would have gone to Europe, and they would have taken over the entire world if not for Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu stopped their conquest. Reb Chaim Kanievsky suggests the reason why Nimrod is mentioned here first, as we said before, is that Nimrod had made this suggestion in the first place, while Kedar LaOmer was the known leader. Not that Nimrod was the leader. Nimrod was the guy who wanted to do this out of revenge for Avram. He did the entire thing in order to get Lot. So he said, let's start a war. He wanted to get Lot. And Amraphel and Kedar LaOmer said, perfect, I'll have a reason to take over the entire world. That's what he says over there. Mi'am lo'ei seder adoros and sefer yashar say, this was right after Migdal Bavel. What happened after Migdal Bavel? Everybody was split into different places. Nimrod was king and remained king in Shinar, which is the area above where they made the original tower in the first place. The people were exiled to different lands, but they still retained the relationship with Nimrod, and they paid him tribute with taxes by giving him a ton of money because he was still their old king. Even though they were in different places now, they still gave him a ton of money, etc. Kedar LaOmer was a general in Nimrod's army. When Kedar LaOmer was exiled a little bit further down, so he no longer was with Nimrod, eventually he rebelled against Nimrod, and he decided he was going to stop paying taxes. In the end, other people followed suit. Kedar LaOmer took over the area of the five kings and made them pay him a tribute for a total of 12 years. Kedar LaOmer on his own took over the area of the five kings of Sodom and Amora, Admah, Tzvoyim, and Bela. He took over that entire area, made them pay him a bunch of taxes until they began to rebel against him, and Kedar LaOmer called in for backup. Nimrod took advantage of the situation. He spoke to Sidal and Arioch, bringing an army of 7,000 men to fight against Kedorlaomer. Kedorlaomer brought an army of 5,000 men, killed 600 of Nimrod's men, including the general of the army who was Nimrod's son, Mardon. This caused the other kings to align with Kedorlaomer. They all joined. Arioch, the king of Elasar, etc., and Sidal joined with Kedorlaomer, and they went back to Nimrod and said, "Join us or we'll kill you." Nimrod had no choice. He joined with Kedorlaomer, and then they went to the five kings to take revenge against the fact that 12 years earlier they had rebelled against Kedorlaomer. They went in and destroyed them. That was the War of the Kings, in which he had all five of them together. All this happened when Avram was either 78 or 79 years old. The original war is taking place when he was 65 and possibly not even in Eretz Yisrael yet. That's when all of this was happening. That's when Lot was captured and he had settled in Sodom at the age of around 78, 79. That's when all this happened. Now, what was the purpose of the war being mentioned? Why do you have to mention this, and what's the big deal that we have to know about all this? The Ramban says, all of this is an awesome nevuah. Four kings, right? Four kings. Does anybody remember what the parsha before this is? What's the parsha right before the four kings and the five kings? Avram Avinu went down to Mitzrayim, right? And his wife was taken by them. And after that happened, right, she obviously, Paro had his negayim, the plagues that happened to him, sent out Avram and Sarah. Right afterward, we get into the four and five kings. Within the next parsha, we get into the four and five kings. Chazal tells us there's a concept called Myself with Sim Labanim, that everything that happens to the Avos ends up happening to the children themselves. These parshios are all a remez to the gullius of Klal Yisrael. There are 4/5 gullius for all of Klal Yisrael. Meaning, we were in gullus in Mitzrayim, we were in gullus in Babel, we had gullus by Persia and Mede, Madai and Paras, we had gullus by Yavon, and the final gullus that we're in right now is by Edom. He says the Ramban, the first gullus, where Avram Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim and has everything happen to him, is a perfect example of myself with similar bottom of what's going to happen to his kids when they go to Mitzrayim. They go down because of a hunger. The people are captured and made slaves to Paro. Sar Avinu is taken. The people are taken. Plagues happen to Paro. He sends them out with tremendous riches. That's a perfect example, right? Of myself with similar bottom. The next four kings that he fights against are all, says the Ramban, representative of the nations they're going to fight in the future. We already said Nimrod is a king of Shinar. Shinar is Babel. That's the first gullus that we're going to have after Mitzrayim, gullus Babel, when Nebuchadnezzar destroys the base of Mikdash along with Nebuzaradan and sends us to Babel. That's number two. That's represented by Nimrod and Amraphel. Number three, Elasar is an area near Syria. The Syrian Greeks that took over during the times of Yavon. Yavon was never Greece. We're not talking about Greece. That's like kids' books. Okay, Syria, Greece, that took over the area of Macedonia, where Alexander the Great originally was king and then was split up into the four kingdoms. Those Syrian Greeks started our second gullus. And therefore, the second king that we bring up over here, which is Elasar, the city in Mede, Persia, so to speak. Oh, I said Yavon, didn't I? That's the messed up. Elasar is in Mede, Persia. Elam is the city in Syrian Greece. That's Elam. Elam is that area referring to Yavon itself. And Goyim refers to Edom. A conglomerate of a bunch of different nations being put together to make it all together. And maybe it's even a remez to the fact that Edom is more of a religion than it is a specific land. Can you say that the Jews are under a certain gullus now? Back then, maybe they were exiled by Edom, but now, can you say that Rome is that whatever? For Italy is nothing. We're referring to more of a goyim. The nations took us over, and that's that. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says it's all foreshadowing to show us what's going to be in the future and what's going to be. That's so appropriate. It means the same way Avraham Avinu got out of Mitzrayim, defeated the four kings, we will get out of Mitzrayim through the help of God and destroy all four nations so that eventually we lead into Mashiach. It's, so to speak, as if I'm doing something to make it easier for my kids to take it over later. Said Avram, you know, I'm doing this in order to make sure everything's going to be easier for my kids. And that answers the classic question. Was Avram crazy? Why is he fighting these guys? They're a powerful nation, four kings that just fought against five kings. And he's going in with Eliezer of Avram? He's going with Eliezer? 318 servants? That's what he's going in with? What, is he crazy? Who would do this? And the answer is, This isn't Avram Avinu fighting. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu fighting for him. The Alshich says, remember it says, Vayavo HaPolit, a guy came to tell Avram that somebody came. So everybody knows, who's the Polit? Polit is Og. Og Melech HaBashan, right? The Medrash says the Polit is Michoel. And Michoel came up to Avram and said, I'm with you. Fight against these four kings and I will do everything you need for you to win. And Avram went up and we all know what happened, right? What did he do? He had no swords. Picked up dirt. And when he threw the dirt, Michoel turned the dirt into swords that destroyed every single person there. The war was fought not by Avram and Eliezer. He never would have done it if it was him himself. He fought it because the Michoel, the Malach, came up to him and said, I will take care of this for you. Fight them in order for your kids to find it easier to have this happen to them in the future, that everything will be there. If this is so, the Chassam Sofer says, you can add something out over here. How did the Jews take over the land of Og and Sichon? Where did Og and Sichon's land come from originally? Does anybody know? Who lived in that land before Og and Sichon did? Nobody knows?
Yeah.
Come on. The land of Ammon and Moab. But Sichon and Og took it over. We weren't allowed to fight Ammon and Moab. But Sichon and Og took it over, and we fought Sichon and Og, destroyed them, and therefore we took over that area. That makes sense then. Because if you think about it, myself as some Labanim, in this way, where the four kings took over the land of Sodom, Avinu wouldn't have taken the land of Sodom on his own. But because he fought the four kings and won, he automatically got the land of Sodom to be his, so to speak. And that's a myself with Sinla Bunim for the fact that they took over Sichon and Og as well a little bit later over here. And if you need more proof, I don't know why you need a proof to this. But if you want more proof, here's the idea. Amraphel Melech Shinar, Aryoch Melech Alasar, Kidor Laomer Melech Elam, Vesidal Melech Goyim is the same gematria as Yatsu Kineged Arba Malchus for the four kingdoms, Malchus Babel, Malchus Madai, Malchus Yavanu, Malchus Edom. I did not do the gematria for that, by the way. I didn't count it up because I didn't have a day and a half to be able to go through all that. But the Rabbeinu Ephraim brings it down and says that's the pshat behind it. Yes?
So then if for Michal, if not Paul, then why is he called the escape one?
The Pulit
escaped
from Shemayim. There's three different possibilities of who the Pulit was. One is Og, one is Michal, there's another one, Gabriel. But Pulit is one that escaped from Shemayim in order to tell them. It's based on a Gemara, I think, in Shabbos, Daf Nun Vav, Nun Hey. I'd have to look it up, but right around there. But that's the idea why he's called Pulit, because he was one that got out of Shemayim to be able to help in Yisrael. Or Achayim HaKadosh tells you how powerful Avram Avinu was. That's an awesome one. Sar Shalom of Bells goes into the Maisa Avos Simla Banim thing, how it could happen in the future. The Shemi Shmuel says about how this happened within Mitzrayim and goes through. We're going to end with one thing. The Miamloi says there's a tremendous lesson being learned from here that sometimes people get and sometimes you don't. Being together with evil people doesn't turn you evil, but it makes you start rethinking what your priorities in life are. You start thinking that this is right and that's right and this is a good thing and that's a good thing. You start doing a different thing when it comes into this. You never want to join in with evil people. Lot had a decision to make. And Lot's decision was, where was he going to go when he got kicked out from being with Avram Avinu? Avram Avinu turned to Lot and he said, what do you want to do? You can go to the right, you can go to the left, you can go to the east, you can go to the west. You decide, and I'll go the opposite way. And Lot decided to go to Sodom. That decision was so fraught with danger. And even if he had positive intentions, I want to go to Sodom because Avram, I want to follow in your footsteps. The same way you tried to get people to become from, I want to make people from in Sodom. I'm going to go to this area and I'm going to get them to become better. I'm going to make them into better people. When you do that, it's fraught with danger. You go into an area where it's filled with tumah. It's very likely you're going to go down instead of bringing the other people up. So Lot may have had good intentions, but look at what happened. Lot goes to Sodom, and within a year, the four kings come and destroy the land. And everything Lot gained from being with Avram Avinu, everything he had gained and gotten in that in all of his journeys, everything he did with Avram Avinu, lost in a second. Lost all of it was gone, all of it taken by the four kings. And even though later he got stuff back, because obviously Avram defeated the four kings and gave everything to the king of Sodom, so the king of Sodom distributed it to all the people, so Lot got something back. But the idea is, when you hang out with evil people, this is the result. You went to a city where the name of this city is Bera. How could you go to a place like that? Why would you hang out in a place like that? You can't get much more evil than that. When that happens, the disaster that happened afterward, there's no one to blame but Lot himself. And that's a lesson. when you have these ideas of hanging out with other people, know what's going to be when you're around that kind of company. It's a warning. It's a fair warning. This is what happened to Lot. Lot left the tzaddik for good reason. And immediately he got into a war with the four kings and was captured and lost all his money. Years later, the city of Sodom was destroyed and he lost all of his money again and his new friends and his talmidim and everything else he had in Sodom. Everything gone, and he barely escaped by the skin of his teeth, losing his wife in the process and a horrible situation with his daughters. Lot is the symbol of how things can go really badly, really bad, really quickly. That's the concept that the Miyamoi has learned from over here, and I feel that that's a tremendous lesson of why we bring up the four kings here, right, more than anything else. So stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbos.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.